listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to this episode of Your Ultimate Life. This is going to be kind of an interesting episode because I just had the opportunity to go to Phoenix and I attended a conference. And I was a speaker at a conference, and it was kind of an extraordinary deal. I've spoken at lots and lots of conferences, but not this one on this topic. And this topic or this conference was the annual meeting of the International Association of Near Death Studies. So there are academics, there are people who have had these extraordinary experiences, researchers, all kinds of folks there to talk about lots of things that have to do with the spiritual phenomena that we describe. And, you know, NDE, near-death experience, now you may have heard that one. That was really the only one that I was, three-letter acronym I was familiar with, NDE, near-death experience, right? There's actually a number of other near-death or spiritual across the veil, you know, kind of things. And they also all have three-letter acronyms. So let me tell you what they are. And then I'm going to tell you some things that I observed and I spoke and what happened during the speaking and what's going on there. But I think you'll find this really interesting as it relates to creating your ultimate life. And here's why. Because most of the time, we don't really live full out, right? We die. We live half-baked. We live in fear. We live defensively. We live hoping the bad stuff doesn't come and worried about the future and or lamenting the past. Like something's, you know, we're just afraid of what might happen, what might break, what might fail and all that kind of stuff. And so we, I don't know about you, but a lot of people live half-baked, you know, not all in. When I was a kid in grade school in different grades, and I don't remember which grade this was, but I had one teacher who, and this might have been the sixth grade, but after lunch, she would read to us a chapter or two out of different books. And lots of the books were really interesting, really, and then many of them were motivational and stuff like that. But it was this one book that she read, story, and it was about an old man, a grandpa, right, who was getting on in years. And, you know, his doctor told him to take it easy and relax and not do this and not eat that and take care of his digestion and, you know, and his body failing this part and that part and whatever, right? A bunch of restrictions and instructions. And he had a grandson, and his grandson would come and visit him, I think, every week at a certain time. I don't remember the particulars. And it doesn't really matter. It's just one element from the story I want to tell you. And that was on one day, right after the old man had been to the doctor. And I don't think the old man had a lot of years or even months left. It seemed like there were a lot of restrictions and things to sort of prolong the life that he was going to have. But anyway, he wasn't supposed to do this, wasn't supposed to have excitement, and, you know, eat, be careful about diet and just a whole bunch of things. And so when the kid got there, the grandpa said, let's sneak out, right? Sneak out and go to the circus. And the kid was like, what? Come on, let's sneak out and go to the circus. And the kid knew, you know, grandpa shouldn't be doing that. But anyway, the grandpa took him to the circus and they rode the rides and ate the grungy hot dogs and chips with that awful cheese sauce that is made out of who knows what and everything, and did all that stuff and had a marvelous time. And then got home and they were talking about the marvelous time they'd had that day. And, you know, the kid asked grandpa, now, how come you did this? I mean, you're not supposed to whatever, blah, blah, blah. And he said this profound advice. And out of the whole story, all of that was just general stuff that I remember about the story. But this sentence I remember, Grandpa said to the kid, you know, my philosophy, live while you live and then die and be done with it. And I love with it. I just love that. And from my sixth grade, you know, when I was 11 or 12 or whatever you are in sixth grade, 12, I guess, I was enamored with that thought. Live while you live and then die and be done with it. And I just love it. Now, this near-death conference has all to do with the die, and it's not over yet. And there are untold numbers of people who have experienced that, myself included. And you know that I had a time when my heart stopped in the hospital. I died in the University of Alberta. U of A, it's the University of Alberta Hospital here in Edmonton, in June of 2018, so 6 years ago, and some change. And then I was revived and so forth. And during that time, I had three conversations with God at the door between life and eternity. And we've talked about that. An episode a little while ago was what dying taught me about living. Today, I want to talk about this conference and also some things that are pretty universal that people report. Now, I had the opportunity. Here's some of the acronyms. There's an NDE. There's ADC, which is after death communication. And of course, anybody can say, well, my grandpa, you know, or my brother or husband or wife or something, I felt their presence. And that's true. But these researchers were really looking at what are evidentiary things. And here's some examples that they gave of evidence. It was one circumstance where the person had died with a secret safe that had some really important things in it. And nobody knew where it was, or nobody knew where the key was, or something like that. No one knew how to get in it. And then there was an after-death communication that told someone where the key was, and they went and looked there, and sure enough, it was there. Those kinds of things, or where important papers were, or some things, you know, the safe deposit box no one knew about, or some other kinds of things that nobody knew, nobody could find. And then there was not only two people there when this one person received this information some way or another, but it turned out to be accurate and demonstrably so. So that's after-death communication. Then there's OBE, which is out-of-body experience. Now, I've experienced that. I experienced that in August of 2007 when I had the divine intervention that changed the direction of my life. In 2007, I was a high-ranking executive making a lot of money. I also was a deeply addicted person to cocaine and other substances, and was living a very short-sighted and self-centered life that was destructive and unhappy. And then I'd attempted to end my life a couple of times and had failed by divine providence only, et cetera, et cetera. And then I had this divine intervention in August of 2007, and that's not the subject today either. If you want to read the details, that's in a book called Tightrope of Depression, My Journey from Darkness, Despair, and Death to Light, Love, and Life. And that book looks like this, if you're watching the video, and I hope you are. I hope you're watching the video not just because you can see what Tightrope looks like, but because you can see this background. The background I told the AI to give me a nice picture depicting the things that are very commonly reported in near-death experiences. All right, so there's OBE, and there's ADC, there's SDE, which I'd actually never heard of till I went to this conference, but it makes sense. It's called a shared death experience, and that's when someone you're with someone as they cross, and for a moment or a period of time, and time is a weird thing that doesn't mean anything in the other realm, their spirit goes with them. And so they experience part of the death experience with that other person, and then, you know, come back and report, are able to report about that. And it wasn't their own death that was there, but it was someone else who then died and stayed dead, and they went with them. And it's interesting, it talked about the tugging feelings of the spirit and so forth. So there's that, and then there's, of course, the NDE, let's see, OBE, SDC, or SDE, I don't know. I may think of another one in a minute. But anyway, there's several acronyms that describe the kinds of things, experiences that we have when we touch that veil and the mystery that is death. And after you've had an experience like I have and many of these people there, it's not even a mystery anymore. It's not exciting. It's not fearful. There's nothing to be afraid of at all. And I know that absolute certainty, and I can look you right square in the eyes with all the love in my heart and tell you there's absolutely nothing to be afraid of. What I was struck by was I spent some time in what was called the experiencer's room. Now, for 4 days, they had presentations and talks, some by academics that had gathered all kinds of data and information about these different phenomena and interviewed hundreds of people, and lots of them with corroborating evidence, you know, with people there also, and et cetera, et cetera. And so that was for research purposes and to corroborate the existence of a spirit realm. So if you look at it, I mean, anyone, you, me, anybody else, we're free to discount all that and say there's no such thing. When we die, it's all done. But you know what? If you look into the evidence, there's way, 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 way too much evidence to the contrary. There's evidence, hardcore scientific evidence, that there is a continuation of life. That's important because it changes how we think about life here. Now, my experience certainly changed everything about what I thought was important and about life here, just like many, many others reported. And what I noticed is listening to different people tell their experiences and the different presenters present their studies and evidence and things, is that we're fascinated and horrified at the same time by death. It represents a permanent transition that we now know a lot more about than we used to, but there's no coming back from most of the time. And those of us that do know that there will come a time when we won't. But there's nothing to be afraid of about that. And what the thing I noticed most strikingly is that most folks still are reluctant, afraid, held back in some way from talking about in detail things that they saw, heard, experienced, and now know. I think, now I don't have that particular feeling, because as soon as I got back in September, I was in the hospital for a month in a coma most of the time. In June and July, I got out in the first part of July, and by September, I'd written two books, Meeting God at the Door, Conversations, Choices, and Commitments of a Near-Death Experience, and that looks like this. You're looking through it because it's green on the cover. And the other one's called The Book of Context, which was a framework given by Revelation during that time about how to change harmful or negative or limiting beliefs that we have about our life and possibility. So I went on a tour literally in October after I'd been out of the hospital a mere 3 months, and I could barely stand up the first month, and I'd learned to walk by then. But I went out to several places and spoke, and one of them was like an all-day seminar where I was the only instructor. So I went right away to talk about these things because I thought they were so important. And, you know, some people come back with spectacular claims and, you know, predicting the future and all that. And I'm not going to say anything about that. To me, that misses the point, quite frankly. The profundity of these things is the personal change. And then the power, the insight, the power, the calmness that the individual who has that experience, me in this case, and many that I met, the clarity that they have about their own life and the determination and commitment that they then further experience. So anyway, what I noticed is that there's so many people that are still afraid, so afraid to go do the good that they could in the world. Now, we've talked here on this show often about your triple helix, your most effective offering, your skills, your gifts, your life experience, and how to use those in a way to create good in the world, to make money, to make good cash living, because they're valuable. I want you to think about it. Your most valuable things are the skills that you know how to do, that you've probably already been selling in the marketplace, the gifts that you have, the divine gifts, the natural proclivities, abilities that you have, to develop them and use them. And the third thing is your life experience. Now, those three bundled together create your MEO, most effective offering, your triple helix. And we've talked about that before, so I'm not going to go over that framework today. But anyway, even with all that, the fear holding people back was amazing. Sad, actually, because there's so much power. Like, they've had extraordinary experiences, and the fear of being disbelieved or laughed at, or what if I fail, or, you know, all of those kinds of fears that we all have some of, is heightened and more powerful when people have had these extraordinary kinds of spiritual experiences, the opportunity to go through that veil that separates us from the next frame of life. So anyway, I noticed that. And after I spoke on using your NDE or other spiritual experience, but I'm speaking specifically about dying and coming back, using that as a springboard to add good to the world. And I don't mean, again, to sensationalize or run around and try to tell the future and blah, blah, blah. I just mean to bring love, opportunity, encouragement, information in many cases, and examples that will be of service not only to you, but for those you interact with, whether you're a coach like I am, or whether you're an entrepreneur of another kind, or whether you just have a regular job and that's what you've decided to do. In that job, who you're being can be powerful and of great service. And so that's such an opportunity, such an important thing to do when you're blessed with one of these experiences. And yet I noticed in the reaction of people in the room when I spoke, and of others, the reluctance that we still have. And that's really no difference than the reluctance we all have to speak, to do presentations, to get up, to be seen, to be heard, to make a difference. We have a reticence to that. And I think it's because we fear ridicule and rejection, you know, that kind of thing. We've tied it to, you know, I'm nothing if people laugh at me. And that's not true in any universe. But it gets in the way of so many people sharing their stories, sharing their experience, and providing not just the information that there is another life, there is a continuation, and but that it is that transition between here and there is nothing to be afraid of. And on the contrary, it's something to be looked forward to at the right time. And none of us know when that is. I mean, I died and got the opportunity to choose to come back. Many, I don't know how many get that opportunity, because I'll never know how many said, no, I want to go on. Like, we'll never know that, right? Because they didn't come back to talk about it. But I felt compelled to come back because I knew that my mission, my purpose, my work was not done, and I had more opportunity to add good to the world. Now, I'm not claiming any power greater than or separate from the divine. Every piece of power that I have, I'm not going to speak for you, is because I have learned a skill, I have a divine gift, or my life experience has taught me something that I know is valuable because it has helped me, and I use it to write books, and I'm pointing over there because my books are in a pile there, that have helped me by writing books, creating programs, coaching, you know, folks, and that sort of thing. So, here's the point. You are a divine being. You have a rich texture of experiences. Whether it includes something like dying and returning doesn't even matter. The experiences that you have had up to this point are tailor-made for you to be the best you can be, to grow the most, to learn the most. Like, this life isn't a waste of time. It's not a random, haphazard bunch of crap. It is a carefully crafted opportunity for you and I to grow, to love, to serve, to add good to the world, to choose to do that. And we don't have to. But here's the truth. The truth is, we came here with nothing. And the only thing we're going to return home with is whatever we've made of ourselves. Like, we're not taking any bank accounts with us. or Lamborghinis or anything else. We're not taking any of that. So the only thing we're going to go back and meet our Creator with is what we have made of ourselves, our character, our attitudes, our feelings. And so when I say add good to the world and become the best we can be, that is that process of, you know, making something out of ourselves with divine help, because it all is with divine help. We got here that way, and, you know, all the growth that we do is going to be to honor that divine heritage, to serve each other. We're happiest when we're in love and service. So anyway, the conference was extraordinary. I took some books to sell, and I sold a number, but far more important to me was the people that I met, the contacts that I made, the hearts that I got to peer into, the stories that I heard, and the fear that I sensed to share those things. It wasn't very long ago before that sort of thing was just completely ridiculed and you were written off as crazy. You're not. You're a divine being. You came from somewhere and you're going somewhere. And because you or I or someone else had a taste of that crossing and lived, you know, came back to do something with that taste, it's just another extraordinary experience. So now I wanted to talk about the conference. And here's the fun part. I had never been to that conference before. I'm not even a member of IANDS. I'm going to join now. Membership isn't very expensive, but there are some other benefits. They hold that once a year. And I had a client who had encouraged me for 2 or 3 years now, I think this is the third year, to fill out a form to speak, to apply to speak. And I had not been selected in the 2 years past. And this year I was selected. And I had an whole hour, which some people only got a half an hour, I got a whole hour in the second to the largest ballroom. And because I spoke from my heart and talked sincerely about this experience, and I've talked about personal truth document, I've talked about morning rituals and self-creation and all that here a lot of times on the show, and that all made such a difference. It meant that when I spoke, I could connect with their hearts. I didn't use slides like everybody else did. I didn't even stand up on the podium. I was down in front and spoke in deep and powerful connection. And when I got done, the spirit, the power of the conversation was so great that, you know, they sprung to their feet and gave me a standing ovation, which I don't think any other talk in the whole 4 days received that. None that I saw or none that I heard about. And I don't say that for yay me. I say that because of the power of the connection. You matter, and you can have that kind of impact if you're willing to take a risk, to tell the truth, to find your divine gifts and make your triple helix and then add good to the world. Whether you've had a spiritual experience. Oh, there's an STE. That's another one. Spiritually transformative experience. So there's OBE, spiritually out-of-body experience, spiritually transformative experience. Both those were part of 2007. There's NDE, near-death experience, which is mine in 2018. And then there's ADC, after-death communication, and shared death experience. Now, this after-death communication, I've had that in spades. I never thought about it. They talked about guardian angels and, you know, those kinds of things. And it says in scriptures that the angels are around us. And when I think about that, there's a number of times when I have absolutely sensed a spiritual presence in the room and known who it was. And it was never just for fun. It was never just to be woo or any of that kind of nonsense. It was always with a message, with a purpose, sometimes of comfort, sometimes of ideas, sometimes of commitment and promise from heaven. Like commitments and promises have come from heaven to reassure me in my own mission. Sometimes when we're trying to do good things and add good to the world, especially if you're trying to build a business, it can be lonely and scary. You can feel like you're doing it wrong and second guess yourself and a whole pile of other stuff. And that kind of reassurance that comes from the heavenly realm is the most powerful by a million miles. Nothing can touch it. because somehow it speaks to that core of your soul. So that's about the conference. And as many of the acronyms as I can remember, and it doesn't matter, I just thought it was fun. Now, the last half of our session today, I want to talk to you about 10 things. 10 things that I personally learned and or had reinforced in my own experience, which I talked about there. That was part of my talk, both the transformative experience in 2007, dying in 2018, and then how it has shaped my life since then. And the mission that I'm on, you're part of that mission. I'm here to help 250 million people to wake up, realize who they are, divine, infinitely powerful, infinitely capable, able. You are able to overcome any challenge or difficulty you have in front of you. Whatever it is, illness, poverty, betrayal, sadness, pain, mental illness, physical challenge or disability, you have the ability to overcome, to, add good to the world anyway, and have a profoundly joyful life. Okay, so here are the 10 things that I collected that I wanted to just mention and talk a little bit about how they showed up to me. The first one is a peace beyond fear. I didn't think about this during my near-death experience, during my three conversations with God, but because of the life that I'd lived and the suicide attempts and the drugs and the failings and everything else, the idea of meeting God was terrifying. I knew that I would be condemned and screamed at and burned at the stake and sent to hell and everything else because I deserved it, right? And what I noticed afterwards, and I didn't realize how profound it was until after the experience was over, was the complete absence of any of that. There was peace. There was just peace. I wasn't afraid to be in the presence of God. I didn't cower in fear. It didn't even occur to me to do that. So there was a profound peace and a genuine dialogue. Can you think about that? Your God, my God, our Creator, Almighty, that can do and create and be anything, anywhere, all is approachable, loves you more than you can possibly understand. And I got to experience a piece of that. And it's just mind-blowing. And so I share that with you so you will feel loved and know that that's true, because I certainly am no different or better or any of that kind of nonsense than you are. In fact, you're probably more advanced than I am. I was so lost that I had needed some pretty extreme wake-up calls. And even in those wake-up calls, there was peace and there was no fear. It is not fearful. Meeting our Creator is not a fearful thing. It's a wondrous and powerful thing. The second thing is that was related to that is unconditional love. Now, I was raised without that. I did not experience unconditional love in my upbringing. The biggest emotion that I remember in my childhood is fear, because I got not always, but there were periods of time where I got spanked or beat every day. Every single day, I did something that was worthy of slapping, screaming, spanking, kicking, some other kind of physical mutilation and occasional, sexual intimidation or sexual abuse. And that happened more times than I can even count. And I definitely remember thinking, this is every day. And I remember being in my room one day screaming silently, because I didn't dare scream out loud out the window at God, what's wrong with me that I get beat every single day? And so the idea of unconditional love, I did not experience any of that. It was a mythical thing. It was a thing that did not exist. And to me, it was conditional on, if you're a good boy, then you get love. You get loved when you are a good boy. And that's how it was all connected for me. And to experience the overwhelming, and this is something reported by nearly every person that experiences a transition across the veil and back is this unconditional, incomprehensible love. And that doesn't mean acceptance of everything. That doesn't mean justification of everything. It's hard to explain because there's still right and wrong. There's still consequences. There's still cruelty and kindness. But at the same time, there's this basket of unconditional love and encouragement that is so amazing and overwhelming. The third thing is how connected we are. Like literally, you are my brother and sister. You are. We came from the same place. We were created by the same God. Maybe we knew each other. Maybe you've had that experience of meeting someone that you know you knew before, and you have that sense. I have had that experience. And I'm looking forward to dying for real this time and meeting those people with whom I know I have a connection, a friendship, an intimate knowledge and feeling. I'm looking forward to that. And there's some of the same people who I have felt in my presence spiritually at different times. We are interconnected. And that goes beyond just humans. All life is sacred. And I don't mean, I'm not trying to take a position, you never hunt or you do whatever. I'm not standing on any soapbox here. Or that animals can't be used for food. But I am taking the position that life is sacred, plants are sacred. Together, we are part of this amazing, astounding, beautiful, breathtaking divine creation called life. And every piece of life has spirit in it. We're told in scripture that the rocks and the hills sing at some point when God returns. That's going to be interesting to see, right? But we certainly know absolutely without question that you can feel the life in plants. There's all kinds of studies about plants doing better when they're treated kindly and spoken lovingly, you know, toward them and so forth. They grow better and faster. So there's an energy in love that can't be comprehended, but it does connect us. Love is literally the power and the essence that binds things, that keeps stuff organized, that makes the world and the universe stay as it does. The next thing that I certainly noticed and that many, many report is that time is an illusion. Like we have a method here yesterday, today, tomorrow, and we have this sequence. But I can tell you when I was having these conversations with God, time didn't mean anything. Like my recollection or my experience is that the first conversation was short. One question, do you want to come home? And we talked about it. And I said, no, I'm not done yet. My recollection, and I'm sure that's when they restarted my heart because I was flatlined. Because I said, decided to stay. And so it's like, okay, boom, heart restarts. The second conversation was long, felt like long, perhaps hours. I don't know because time doesn't mean anything. There were lots of things that happened. And they seem to happen in sequence, which means in our understanding, they took some amount of time. But I really have no idea, right? And, you know, I was out in a coma for 17 days. And during that coma, like it all passed in an instant. And then I was out of the coma and I think I was in the hospital 28 days or something. So the next 11 days seemed like 1,000 years. So really, like it seemed like clocks as I looked at them were running backwards. And I know I was hallucinating. They had me on some drugs sometimes. And I just had these crazy experiences. And the hallucinations I had then were almost always dark and fearful. Time seemed to drag. And you know, I talk about all this in the book, Meeting God at the Door, so I'm not going to repeat it all here. But time is certainly in an illusion, and it is the only resource we have, really, in equal amounts. Some people have more money than others, or more physical capability, or more intelligence. Time is the same for all of us, even though it feels different sometimes. So it's precious. The past, the present, and the future somehow all seem connected when you're in that other realm. And here, we know they influence. What I do today influences tomorrow, and what I did yesterday influences today. But it's an illusion, and that's just, that's also reported by everybody who has these kinds of experiences. The fifth one I want to talk about is the power of thought and intention. We sometimes say, well, you know, if I'm thinking negatively, I'm the only one that's hurt, or it's my own thoughts. It doesn't matter. And we say that kind of stuff, and that is the most untrue thing I can, I can't tell you how untrue that is. Your thoughts create. There's books, as a man thinketh, so is he, and that's a partial quote of a scripture. It means what you think comes into existence. What you speak comes into existence. What you speak quietly in your own mind influences how you feel, what you do, and what you create. So I can't emphasize enough. I knew this before, and I know it 1,000 times more powerfully now, that what you think and what you speak creates. So if you speak garbage, you create garbage. If you speak fear, you create fear. If you speak betrayal, you speak betrayal. If you spend your time in anger and frustration looking for revenge and justice, and you create retribution, negativity, and everything else. On the other hand, if you spend your time and thought and speaking in love, forgiveness, growth, excitement, reaching, all those things show up in your life. And that's where the idea of, you know, the law of attraction sort of comes, which is what you think manifests. It does. The law of attraction by itself is not complete without the action part of attraction. The action part is critical. And the actions we take are driven by our thinking. So if we think this will never work, I can't do it, then we drag in our actions and we don't want to do things and we hang around and we waste time. If we know in our hearts and we visualize, and that's part of it, if we visualize and see the future and see possibilities, that drives us to take consistent, motivated, intentional, relevant action. And here's the key, it operates laws in the universe we don't understand. Your intention and your thinking moves other stuff besides your hands and feet. And that's the key here. We know we move things with our hands and feet and with our mind and stuff. There are other forces and other laws and other things that go to work when you speak into the conscious unified field. So that's important. And that's something that a lot of people realize when they have these kinds of experiences. Another thing, number six of the 10 that I want to mention here, is many people, myself included, come back from one of these experiences with a purpose and meaning energized beyond belief. I was already a coach since 2007 to 18, those 11 years. I wrote some books and I created a coaching practice and I was, you know, working on things, et cetera, et cetera. And it was put on steroids, lit on fire, given rocket fuel, whatever, you know, metaphor you want to use, after that happened. More powerfully engaged, more focused, more clear, more, you know, determined. Every day, I never skip my morning creation. I never skip that because it means so much to my ability to function and work during the day. So another common theme that I certainly experienced is this yearning to find meaning. And that's one of the reasons I created this triple helix idea. Here's an invitation. If you want help creating your intention, your purpose, your life mission, that thing that fires you up, get a hold of me. I am a world-class expert at helping people discover and declare those things. A brain surgeon, rocket scientist, I can do that. You have gifts and talents and you have meaning and purpose. If you haven't found them yet, let's talk. Reach out. I'd love to help you. Okay, the seventh thing is about a book. I wrote a book about forgiveness, and part of that came from my experience on the other side. Here's what I know. As long as I carry anger, frustration, and guilt toward anybody, whether it's toward you not you, but you, anyone that did something to me, you know, my parents who raised me abusively and others that did whatever they did. If I'm carrying justice and they need punishment and negativity and they don't understand how bad they hurt, you know, if I'm carrying that kind of energy, it doesn't hurt anybody else. You know, the old drinking poison and waiting for someone to die, it really is poison because it poisons my energy. It poisons my effort. It poisons my ability to love fully and freely here. You can't separate that. I could not love my beautiful angel wife, Joy, as much as I do if I was carrying negativity. And that was true during the years before that, because I was carrying so much pain aimed at myself. I was angry, frustrated, fearful, raging at myself because I'd failed in so many, failed as a dad, set a bad example, been a drug addict, been a pathological liar, failed in relationships. That's why I committed suicide or attempted to. That was unrelated to my NDE. That came from an illness, not a suicide attempt. But I hated myself. I hated viciously and furiously. And every single day, every single minute, I used to say, I can't wait to be unconscious. And that was feeling, you know, asleep or stoned. That feeling came from hating myself so much because I was such a failure. And as long as you're carrying any part of that or a lot of it or even more than I did, you're useless in terms of adding good to the world and loving and serving with your divine gifts. You can't even find your divine gifts. They're covered over in a layer of cement of anger, hate, negativity, fear. So forgiveness is so critical. And at least for me, and I find for many, forgiving yourself is critical. That I don't mean pretending stuff away. If you have to fix something because you made mistakes, fix it. But after you've done what you can, you must let it go. Allowing things in the past to have power in the present is painful, negative, dampening. It puts a blanket on everything you do. It turns you into half a person. It dims your light. So that's something that I certainly experienced, and that what caused me to write the book about forgiveness. I wrote a book called Forgiveness, A Journey of Courage to a Place of Freedom and Power. And I wrote all these books because I needed them. These were all things that I went through and did in my own growth and self-healing and recovery and fixing and, you know, atonement process, trying to make right things that I'd done wrong. All right. So that forgiveness is profound and is reported by many and certainly experienced by me. The number eight is the absolute reality of spiritual beings. Okay, now some people report when they have these experiences being met by a group of people, and I wasn't. I had three conversations with God, period. I did not have a host of people running around talking to me. That wasn't the point. And my experience is every one of these NDEs or SDEs or STEs or OBEs or, you know, all that stuff has a point. There's a purpose. There's a reason. They're not just random crap. They're meant to teach us something to allow us to grow ourselves. And so some people talk about having, you know, like I said, having a group of people. I didn't. I had three conversations with God. They were profound, they were transformative, and I wrote about them in the book. And I've shared many of them here before in other episodes fully, if you want to go back and dig them up or just read the book. But here's the other thing. You're not alone. You're never alone. These beings are real. The spirits are real. Your departed ancestors, other people. I told you earlier in this episode, I've had many, many times when I have felt the presence of people in the room with me so powerfully that I turned my head to see because I knew they were standing right over there. I knew it. I could feel their energy and presence. Now, you can think I'm a nut job. I don't care. I have felt it and I know it. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes I knew exactly who was there. And the presence of their being was so powerful that I expected to see them and I didn't. But I knew they were there, and that happens. And it happens regularly. And people call them spiritual guides or, you know, support beings or something like that. They're there. Your angels are around you. They are there rooting for you. They have to obey the rules of agency, like can't interfere with our right to choose. Because unless we choose to grow, unless we choose, it doesn't matter anyway. Anybody that makes anybody else do anything, it's useless. So there's no interference, but they're there with love and encouragement, and you can feel them. And every single person breathing air has many angels supporting and rooting for you. The ninth one is our consciousness. Like, we're the same person. There's continuity. It continues. Like, when I was talking to God, it was me. It was Kellen. I was there. It was me with the same memories and clarity that I have now. Now, when we came from before, you know, there's a veil of forgetfulness we have, and that's part of the design. Maybe it's to learn to walk by faith. Faith is also a power. It's not blindness. Love is power. Faith is power. Faith creates. Christ taught, and other teachers too, if you have faith as a grain of a mustard seed, you can say to the mountain, move, and it'll move. Faith creates, right? When we have faith, it is a power. It moves the energies of the world. That's the basis, frankly, of the ideas of law of attraction and of speaking things into existence. Faith is the moving power that gets that done. And love is the engine. Faith is the fuel, if you will. So those things are creative, and our consciousness continues. You were the same person before, here, and after. That's not the same as some people talk about reincarnation, where you have multiple lives and you're somebody else. That isn't not consistent with my experience. My experience is there's a continuity. Where I was before, I knew things. I can't remember now for a reason. I'm here, and then when you move forward, there's a continuity of your consciousness. The last one is the most important thing, and that is you and I are connected. I'm doing all these shows. I'm doing all these shows because I love you. I want to give you encouragement, frameworks, tools, encouragement, examples, energy, permission to end addiction to mediocrity, to end excuses, to love yourself freely and fiercely and furiously, because you're worth it. You're valuable. You're capable. You're amazing. That's so important. And it has manifested itself. I used to hate myself. Now I love myself. I used to be drowning in guilt and shame. Now I live in the power of forgiveness and growth. I can hardly articulate the meaning and power that that has given me. And that's the reason I love you. I don't even need to know you. I love you. You're a divine being. We came together to add good to the world. So I'm inviting you to join me. So as we wind down today, I have three invitations. My entire life, every day from morning to night, is devoted to one thing. I want to reach 250 million people with the message of hope and possibility, with a message of encouragement and love and capability. You're divine. You have capability, and therefore your possibility to create is endless. So I invite you to share this show with someone who needs love and encouragement. I invite you to get a hold of me. I want to meet you. I love meeting new people to see your divine capability and gifts. If you want my help in creating a powerful truth statement like a PTAC or a daily ritual or accomplishing any goal, starting a business, growing a business, creating cash, fixing relationships, loving yourself, forgiveness, any of those things that are so essential and powerful to a joyful life. Ultimate life is purpose, prosperity, and joy. Your purpose is your triple helix. Prosperity is the value, the cash you create, because cash is just a trade mechanism. The cash you create is just recognition of the value you bring to the world with your skills, your gifts, and your life experience, that triple helix we talked about. And I invite you, if you have a message that you'd like to share. One of the things I noticed at the conference was so many people had messages, but you know what? They hadn't organized them. They could talk about the experience they'd had, but they didn't take the effort or time to craft it into a message of hope, of capability, of possibility for everyone that they'd talk to. They just contented themselves with relaying the incident. You are so much more than that. The way we add good to the world is to take all of our life experiences, including the extraordinary ones like this kind of stuff, but even our regular experiences, and making a choice to add good to the world, to love, to create, to serve, to be a beacon of light, a vessel of love, a conduit of power, to lift and to bless and to serve those around us. You and I were built to love and serve. You're called to do that, and you know you felt that. So the last invitation is to go to this URL, www.yourultimatelife.ca. www.yourultimatelife.ca, and get the free stuff. That'll put you on my email list also, and then I can send you love and encouragement every single day. I know without question you're a divine being and you can create anything you want. However, in order to make that happen, we have to follow the rules of creation, forgive ourselves, create our own good intentions, and learn to love and to create and to serve. That's the way for any of us to create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.